ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। We are reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter 1, 58 to 60, correct? And on the board it starts with Mataya, is that right?
I can't read it.
Yeah. So I'm going to read the first, I'll read the three verses, and then we'll repeat the last verse. Ekadashu ekadashu vanamyata pricha shadesha krid vijaha adayatata avritaha phala pushpa samit kushnan tadarsha kaminam kachach chutram saha bujishaya pitva cha madhu marayam Madagurnita netraya, Mataya vishlatan nivya, Vayapitam nirapatrapam, Hridantam anuganyantam, Asantam anya anayantike. Again, I'm going to do the last verse. Mataya vishlatan nivya, Vayapetam nirapatrapam, Kridantam anuganyantam, Asantam anayatike. One more time. Mataya vishlatan nivya, Vayapetam nirapatrapam, Kridantam anugayantam, Asantam anayantike. Vishwatanya Vaitaram Nirpatatam Santam Manipayantam Santam Manayantike Mataya Vishwanivya Deyantikarindatam Asantamanyanike Matyavishalatamya Yapetam Yarapatitam Gritatam Manugayantam Asantamanayatike Matajis. Mataya Vishwatan Nivya Yapitam Nirapantacham Santam Manivaryantam Asantam Manayantike Mataya Vishwatan Nivya Yapitam Nirapantacham Vitatam anuganyantam Tatam anyantike Ekada. Once upon a time, Asho, this Ajamil, Vanamyataha, went to the forest, Pitri, of his father, Sadesha, the order, Krit, carrying out Dvija, the Brahman, Adaya, collecting tataha from the forest. Avritaha, returning. Fala pushpa, fruits and flowers. Summit kushan, two kinds of grass, known as summit and kusha. The darsha, saw. Kaminam, very lusty. Kanchit, someone. Shudram, a fourth class man. A sudra. Shaha, along with. Pujisyaya, an ordinary maidservant or prostitute. Pidva, after drinking. Cha, also. Madhu, nectar. Marayam, made of the soma flower. Mada, by intoxication. Aghurnita, moving. Netraya, her eyes. Mataya, intoxicated. Vishvatat Nivya, whose dress was slackened. Vyapatam, fallen from proper behavior. Nirupatrapam, without fear of public opinion. Kridatum, engaged in enjoyment. Anugayatam, singing. Hasantam, smiling. Anaya, with her. Antike, close by. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Once this Brahmin Ajamil, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass called Summit and Kusha. On the way home, he came upon a Shudra, a very lusty fourth-class man, who was shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Shudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying as if this were proper behavior. Both the Shudra and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Ajamil saw them. Purport. While traveling along the public way, Ajamil came upon a fourth-class man and prostitute who are vividly described here. Drunkenness was sometimes manifest even in bygone ages, although not very frequently. In this age of Kali, however, such sin is to be seen everywhere, for people all over the world have become shameless. Long ago, when he saw the scene of the drunken sudra and the prostitute, Ajamil, who was a perfect brahmachari, was affected. Nowadays, such sin is visible in so many places, and we must consider the position of a brahmachari student who sees such behavior. For such a brahmachari to remain steady is very difficult unless he is extremely strong in following the regulative principles. Nevertheless, if one takes to Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we prohibit illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. In Kali Yuga, a drunk, half-naked woman embracing a drunk man is a very common sight, especially in the Western countries. And restraining oneself after seeing such things is very difficult. Nevertheless, if by the grace of Krishna, one adheres to the regulative principles and chants the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna, will certainly protect him. Indeed, Krishna says that his devotee is never vanquished. Kunteya prachajaniti na me bhakta panasyati. Therefore, all the disciples practicing Krishna consciousness should obediently follow the regulative principles and remain fixed in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Then there need be no fear. Otherwise, one's position is very dangerous, especially in this Kali Yuga. Translation, once this Brahman, Ajamil, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass called Samit and Kusha. And on the way home, he came upon a Sudra, a very lusty fourth-class man who was shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Sudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying as if this were proper behavior. Both the Sudra and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Ajamil saw them. Om gana tamran desya gana gana shalakaya chakshur un militam jidas mai tri gurev namaha shri taitanya manomitam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadandikam vandeham shri guru shri guru patakamalam shri guru vaishnavam stra shri rupam shagajitam sahagana Raghunan vitam tam sajivam sadvetam savadutam purujana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padam sahagana lalita shri vishakvitam cha. Hey krishna kanuna sindhu dina jivapite gopita gopika kanta radha kanta namostute tapakanchana goranje radhe vrindavaneshwari vishambhanu sute devi pranami hari priye vancha kalpa trivyascha kripa sindhu vyevascha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnevyo namo namaha shri krishna chaitanya prabhunichananda shri advaita gadadhar shivasari gaur bhakta vrinda hare krishna 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 hare 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 rama 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 hare hare. Where to begin? A fish in the ocean, in the water, doesn't know that it's in the water because it's all water. So similarly, in this Kali Yuga, the idea of being inappropriate in our dress and in our behavior, it's only Jai, Hare Krishna. Shri Shri Radha Rasa Bihari, Shri Sitaram Lakshmahan, Shri Shri Gornitai Ki, Jai. It's very difficult for the living entities to distinguish the fact that by this kind of association, one is easily led into sinful life. Because sinful life is everywhere. So, it's the norm. It's the normal. It's the new normal for Kali Yuga. Whereas in past ages, of course, it was, as Prabhupada says here, was sometimes manifest even in bygone ages. So, first of all, we have to accept the fact that we take responsibility, each one of us, for arriving in the womb of our mother and being ejected into Kali Yuga at this time. Somehow, by our desires, we have deserved to be born into this very fallen age. If we can accept that responsibility fully, then there's some chance when we have the opportunity to come in contact with the teachings or of the pure devotee to actually understand our real condition. Because we're here by our choices. And those choices can be made even today because we're determining our future bodies by our present condition. Now, it may strike us rather in a depressing way to think that such a pukka Brahman like Ajamil could be easily overcome simply by glancing at this scene of lusty desires. If you recall, when Shukadev finally left the womb after being assured that he would not be affected by the three gunas, the modes of nature. He passed naked some beautiful apsaras who were bathing in a sarovar, and yet neither they attempted to put their clothes on, nor did he even get agitated for even one nanosecond by seeing them. He was so fixed, so purified, even they recognized that Shukadeva himself was above the modes of nature. He was in the sudasattva position, the mode of pure goodness. Whereas when his father, Vyasadeva, went chasing after him, and he passed the same sarvar, those same girls immediately put their clothes up in front of them. And he was immediately somewhat agitated. And he was in his clothes, whereas Shukadeva was not in his clothes. So it is possible that a person can be fully fixed up and not agitated by such scenes as the lusty desires exhibited here in front of Ajamil, or the extraordinary beauty of the feminine form in the case of Shukadeva Goswami, or even Vyasadeva himself had to kind of run by him like this, had to run by him like this, you know. And this is unusual, of course, but we should understand that it's possible. And how is that possible? Through our desire to actually be fixed in devotional service. Now, Prabhupada gives a solution for us, because it's hopeless. You know, when we speak about this wonderful Brahman, Ajamil, you know, we think about him. I remember when we were doing the puppet shows, we were filming these puppet shows back in 1985. And so Jagatarini and her husband, Burijan, they were the puppeteers, and they had devised the show of Ajamil. And I started looking at the rehearsing it with them for the cameras. And I said, gosh, you know, these are supposed to be children's shows, you know. I don't know, how can we put this on for kids? You know, the story of do you tell, you know, five, six years old about prostitutes and lusty desires and, you know, all this stuff, you know. I said, it's a little early, isn't it? But anyway, they said, well, it's, you know, it's part of the Bhagavad. You know, those days we were pretty narrow-minded about everything, in terms of we didn't think about, well, it's the Bhagavatam and it's what Prabhupada's given us, and, you know, they can handle it. So we put it out there as a puppet show, but we I have to say that the feedback over the years is the kids really didn't understand it, and nor should they, actually. Bhagavatam is not meant for children. This story of Ajamil is actually quite graphic. Isn't it? I mean, even the language, when you see the words, even in the Bhagavatam, kissing or kisses, doesn't it kind of jump out of you as being a little out of place? You know, I mean, it's almost like a salacious novel, you know, that you're reading in this. And yet, Prabhupada doesn't, and the Shukadeva didn't want to hide the reality of what happens in life from us, that we're going to be confronted, especially in this age where we're assaulted with graphic imagery or real-life love affairs going out on Juhu Beach or wherever we are. It's constantly attacking us. And we wonder, how is it possible that we can defend ourselves against this kind of association? You know, Prabhupada gives that example of the air that's going over a very dirty place like a sewage, and the air picks up the smell of that. And then if it goes further and it goes over the beautiful aromas of a rose garden, it will pick up that. So he gives us his example that
we should be very careful about our association, our sangha. This is our invisible shield, so to speak, against falling into these pitfalls that come by associating with the lower modes of nature. But the fact is that we're an illusion if we think that we can protect ourselves. It's just impossible. Think about it. Unless we had the mercy of Krishna in the first place, there's no way we would have ever been able to understand what Prabhupada was saying in these books or what the devotee would be preaching to us. By ourselves, we were helpless. We may be under the illusion that I came to Krishna consciousness by myself, if that's what happened through some gyan, some study. But the reality is you came because of a devotee. It may have been only Srila Prabhupada, or it may have been another devotee, or it may be a combination of devotees. But you certainly did not come to this understanding of the absolute nature of Krishna by yourself. That's for 100% certain. So there's no way that you're going to protect yourselves from the onslaught of the stimulation of the material nature. You cannot do it by yourself. And Prabhupada makes this point very clear here. He said that to be protected, you have to be steady, nishta, you have to be steady and fixed in the chanting of the holy name. Now, he doesn't say that you have to have it a ruchi, a taste for chanting. There's no qualification about the nature of your relationship with the feeling you get from chanting. He just says the chanting of the holy name. So despite your experience of the name, it may be very deep. I know some devotees that, you know, my wife, she loves chant. I mean, she loves japa. She'll do anything just to go to Mayapur for 2 weeks and chant. One day she was there, she chanted from morning at 4 a.m. till midnight. She chanted more rounds than Haridas Thakur. Now, I didn't say she chanted better rounds, but I said she chanted more rounds. She was, you know, some people love chanting. And some people just do their japa as a matter of duty, of their dharma, isn't it? We just do it. What taste? You know, I get some taste in kirtan, not because so much of the holy name, but because I'm with devotees and we're chanting together, and it's somehow the energy is very spiritual, and it's riding on the crest of the name. But the variations of our experience of chanting will be as many people who are chanting, you'll have that many variations in how we're experiencing, feeling the names. But Prabhupada doesn't say it matters how you feel the names, whether you like chanting, you don't like chanting. He doesn't give us any of those qualifications. He says, if you want to be free from bhaya, from fear, the fear of falling again. I read to you in that book from Achyutananda the other day, I read to you about how we got the word bloop, the sound of a stone going into water. Prabhupada liked that. Yes, bloop. So he blooped the sound of the stone going back into the water, into the ocean. Bloop. So if you're smart, you'll accept the fact that we have to have some fear of that. But if you want to have no fear that you'll actually fall down into that intoxication, illicit sex life, gambling, and meat eating, then Prabhupada said, just follow the regulated principles and become fixed in the chanting. Fixed in that chanting, no matter how you feel about it. Now, I'm a walking evidence that you don't have to have a taste for the holy name to still depend on the name for so many years. You know, there's some taste in that chanting. But, you know, it's nothing like, oh, you know, I'd just rather chant rather than do anything. So we're in a very precarious position because we're assaulted by, you know, everywhere we go now. By the billboards, by the way, you know, Prabhupada says here about dress. Well, that's changed. He says in the Western countries. But it's not in the Western countries. It's in here. It's in India now. As I'm fond of telling people, this is not your mother's India anymore. And, you know, we can start labeling everybody, especially guys, we can start labeling the way women are acting and dressing today. We can label them as a prostitute. But that's not going to do us any good, nor them any good. Like I say, we're like fish in water. We've all arrived in Kali Yuga by our desire. Otherwise, we'd be on some other planet in some Satya Yuga or, you know, on the Vaikuntha planets if we were so advanced. Now, let's talk about how we consider this term prostitute. Because I think it's important for us to have a well-rounded understanding. There are prostitutes who are well-respected in Dwarka. So, you know, there's many different levels of understanding the prostitute. I know a person who her entire youth made her money as a prostitute. I mean, a paid prostitute. And she's an initiated devotee today. So, you know, when you level some criticism, or you level the salvo or the sword, using words as a sword, oh, she's a prostitute. Just look at the way she is. That's not about her. That's about you. That's about how a devotee will look at that same person and say, that's a devotee in disguise. That's how a devotee will see like that. They won't see the sin. They'll see the soul. And every soul has a potential. And it's obvious that that's a fact because Prabhupada came and turned so-called prostitutes. We were all into free love and drugs and rock and roll. Almost everybody who began this ISKCON was, in one way or another, debauched in the worst way, even worse than prostitutes. It's a fact. And that's the pastime. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime. That's Lord Nityananda's pastime. Oh, Jagai and Madai, they were just useless drunkards. And yet, through the vision, through the mercy and the vision of the purest of devotees, which of course Nityananda was portraying at that time as a devotee, they became purified. They got the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we're studying this history and life of Ajamil, and it's all about this darn prostitute. Wasn't for that prostitute, he wouldn't have had all that. And then he got so fallen that he himself, we learned, remember in the earlier class, we learned that he was actually a pimp for his wife. That means he was renting his wife out, even while he was married to her. This was in another shastra from Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj. Yeah, he told us that he'd read that. I mean, that's really low. And yet, what did he get at the end of his life? Another chance. You know, we put out that book called A Second Chance. So what to speak of ourselves? Prabhupada had many of his sannyasis fall down and look at women, and somehow or another they got corrupted. Not even corrupted. Corrupt is a judgmental word. They got diverted. They got sidelined. They got distracted. You know, we have to learn to use the language in a non-judgmental way. Because when we think of how Haridas turned that prostitute into a devotee simply by his association, Well, think what we can do by bringing people in front of these deities, or giving people the books, or having them understand a little of this philosophy in one way or another by taking prasadam. However it is. We don't see. We see like it says, we're supposed to see like it says, Krishna says in Gita, we're supposed to see a Brahmin, an elephant, a dog eater, all with equal vision. That's how a sadhu sees. So we have to use language. I mean, language is our means of communicating with people. Now, in the case of the prostitute that's here in this tale, which I love the way this was, it wasn't translated in the translation, but the word ikada, once upon a time. You know, this is a tale, this is a story. Once upon a time, there was this Brahmin, there was this prostitute, there was this incident. It was an inciting incident, and it changed the whole life. When I'm doing scripting, when you're doing stories, you always look for what is the inciting incident in the story. What is that thing that's going to change everything? You know, the easy way out is the plane crashes into the towers. You know, that's an inciting incident. And the more subtle ones deal with internal experiences, the way somebody looked at somebody. That could be an inciting incident if another person becomes envious. So here we have a perfectly told story in one sense, because there's an inciting incident, a pure, so he thought he was pure. This is another point that we have to look at in this story. We thought Ajamil was such a pure-hearted Brahmin. The way he acted, he had it all together. How many people know people that appear to have it all together, or have appeared to have it all together, and then one day there was some sinful activity? And then what did we do with that? We're going to judge them. Ah, you see, they felt, I knew that about that person. He was too good. He was this, he was that. You know, the little voice starts to make judgments. The Ramachandra Puri start to put the ants. Oh, so many ants. I see so many ants going there. You're eating too many sweets, he tells Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, we make those errors. Just like even Maharaj Pariksit made an error. When he put that dead snake around that Muni's neck, he got angry. He allowed that anger to influence his activities. So even he, such a pure, great king, he was so exalted. Even he fell. And to his credit, what did he do? Taraka was going to come. Tarak was on the way, 7 days later. He's on the road and he's coming to bite the king with his venomous, ferociously venomous venom, his poisonous venom. It was so poisonous that when Tarak was on the way to bite King Pariksit, he met one Brahmin boy who claimed that he could counteract, not to worry, the king didn't have to worry, he could counteract Taraka's poisonous fangs. You know this? And Taraka had to prove to the boy that he could kill anything. So he bit a tree, and the tree just turned black and immediately died. And then the boy brought the tree back to life. You see? Nothing to it. So Taraka became worried. Oh my gosh, my vow to fulfill this curse is not going to be able to be carried out. So what did he do? He paid off the Brahmin. So here, instead of getting your money there, I'll give you all this money. Oh, Brahman said, okay, fine, thank you very much. And Taraka went on to carry out the curse, King Parikshit. And what did Parikshit do? King Parikshit, when he was cursed, you didn't think this great king had the ability to counteract the curse? Of course he did. He could have easily counteracted that curse because he was that great. But he was so great that he thought to himself, I won't counteract this curse. This is my destiny. This is Krishna's arrangement for me. This is good for me. And what was his reward for that? He went to sit and wait for the Taraka to come and bite him, kill him. And his greatness was such that the sages heard about the fact that he wasn't going to counteract the curse. So what did they do? They started coming all the way from the Himalayas. They started coming and gathering until finally Shukadeva came and began reciting the Bhagavatam. This was the gift that he received for such humility that he didn't counteract his curse. You know, when somebody curses us, what's a curse for us? Somebody criticizes us. Then we can think of this example. Well, this is great. You know, so what? So I don't have to fight back. It's not necessary. And Krishna will protect me. He'll give me everything for doing that. So bringing it back to the point about within this context of this issue about the prostitute. So when we're looking at the world and looking at people in the world and their activities, their sinful activities, it's everywhere. It's in us. Otherwise we wouldn't be here in this Kali Yuga. We have to think to ourselves, you know. I'm thinking that person's a prostitute. Actually, they're just like me. They've been overwhelmed by the material nature. And they're thinking this and that because they're not that. They're not this body. And somehow I was also thinking that I was this body. I might not have been thinking I was a prostitute, but I was thinking I was this body also. So, let me give them compassion. Let me not think of them as a thief or a prostitute or whatever it is we label people these days. Well, let me just think of them as a covered spirit soul who is desperately in need of prasadam or the right words or a book or whatever it is we can do to give them. And that way we can understand that once upon a time is now. This Ekada is now. And though Ajamil had to go through what he had to go through, still, by the mercy of Krishna, he emerged victorious, able to get that second chance to practice his brahminical vows and to buy that ticket through his bhakti on that airplane back home, back to Godhead. So that's also all of us. And we're going to be reading a lot about Ajamil, and we've been reading a lot about him and his life. But we shouldn't, if we can, we should see it in a very broad way, that we are like him. We are susceptible like he is. How many examples I can give you within the last 42 years of being in ISKCON of devotees that have taken dips in their service, then come back. Somehow or another, they're attracted back. Okay, maybe not in the same color. So what? I don't even know what the color... You know, I don't even know what the color yellow means here. And I see yellow, and I see saffron, different shades of saffron, and I see white, and I see saris of all different colors. What difference does it make? So in conclusion, Krishna says, he promises, Kuntaya Pratijanti Name Bhakta Pranashati. My devotee will never be vanquished. Where there is Krishna, there is always victory and opulence. So we have to have that same faith as we walk through Kali Yuga. As long as we're carrying the holy name with us, whether we're tasting the holy name or not tasting the holy name. The armor works, whether you feel the armor or you don't feel the armor. Just hold it up. And we'll be protected. And I can say from all these years of experience that I've noticed that those devotees that chant regularly, do their japa regularly, I don't know any of them that really have taken a big dive. You know, that had, you know, of course we have our problems, health problems, personal, sometimes marriage, this, that. But I mean, to fall into such a debauched condition as Ajamil, nobody who I've ever, who's been chanting have I ever seen, at least experienced, and I'm certainly not experiencing everybody, but it's not my experience to see that they fall into such a condition. Krishna seems to protect those that take his name in this age of Kali. So we can at least have that confidence. If you believe that it's true, you can have that confidence that with the holy name, Krishna will protect me. I don't have to protect myself, actually. Krishna will protect me because he gives you the intelligence. He gives you that buddhi by which you do the right things. That's the protection that he gives you. It may look like you're doing it yourself, but actually Krishna is inspiring you. Why? Because he's doing everything. There's nothing he's not doing. And we're just sitting inside and witnessing and desiring. I have an experiment. I'll give you an example before we end the class. So how many people in the room, how many people, just raise your hands. Your right hand is working. Just raise your hand. Your right hand is working. Okay, so that's about what, 60% people's right hand is working. Should we do that again? I'll say it again. Please raise your hand if your right hand is working. Your right hand's not working? Are you? Huh? Ah, his right hand's working. Very good. Everyone's right hand is working now? That's good. Now, how did your hand go up in the air? How did that happen? How did your hand go up in the air? How did you do that? Did you tell your brain to tell that synapse, to tell that muscle to twitch? Is that how you did it? Or did you just desire for your hand to go up? I want my hand to go up. Right? My hand goes up. It's like automatic. So what am I doing? I'm just sitting here. I'm just desiring. And by my desire, everything is manifesting. By Krishna's what? By his arrangement of the material energy. So everything situated on desire. Just like pearls are on a thread. Everything situated on desire. And how is that desire nourished? Harinama, 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 Vikevalam, Kaloa, Nasteva, 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 Gatir, Nyata. In this age of Kali, the only way is to chant the holy name of the Lord. That's how you water the seed. Watering the seed. That's how we do it. The bhakti lata bij is a seed. And it will only become a strong plant of devotion if we water it. And we water it through what? Chanting. But why? How does the chanting occur? How does the body chant? How do we do it? Is it me moving my lips and my tongue? Or am I desiring? And by Krishna's grace, I'm chanting. By Krishna's grace, I'm chanting. I'm not doing the chanting. Only by Krishna's mercy am I doing that chanting. We think we're the doer. It's the greatest illusion we have. And every day we're reinforced in that illusion. So we'll take this lesson from Ajamil, that we're not the doer, that we need protection, that we can only desire, and we can only assume that the desire of this Brahman was not to actually serve Krishna fully. He had to be purified. He had to go through this fire in his life, as so many of us do. But that eventually he was saved by Krishna also. So you may have friends that are going through hard times. They may not be doing things that are so-called that Krishna conscious. But just think of the story of Ajamil, and you encourage them and nurture them and water them like you water your own seed. And you'll see, in due course of time, Krishna will make all the arrangements and they will again become enlivened in Krishna consciousness. That is a guarantee. So I thank you very much. If there are any questions, I'm happy to respond. Anybody have a microphone? Well, just say it. Just say it. I'll repeat it.
Devotional service. And what about the body? Does he protect the body also? That is my question. He protects.
Yeah, it's a good question. His question is, when we define Krishna protecting, is he protecting the soul, the devotional service, the body, a combination of all three? What's he protecting? Right?
That's right.
Right. I've always looked at the protection solely from the spiritual point of view, that Krishna will always protect my devotional creeper. And as far as the body, anything, this is how I've been taught to look at it. Anything that's good that's happened is Krishna's protection. And anything that's bad that happens to me or anybody else, that's just a little bit of what I actually deserve. So you're training your consciousness to give Krishna all the credit for whatever is good physically or spiritually, and whatever happens that's not so good materially, Krishna's still being so kind, because it would be far worse if I had not engaged in devotional service and taken some form of shelter.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Prabhu, Ajamila, by associating with the prostitute, he did not commit illicit sex. He did not violate the principle of illicit sex. Am I correct? Because he married the prostitute.
I brought this same point up when Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was talking. I said, well, I mean, he really, she wasn't a prostitute after the time she got married. So, what, you know, why is she always referred to, you know, as a prostitute? Why is she being referred to as a prostitute throughout her entire married life? And that's when he brought up the fact that he was actually renting her out, and she was still performing her role as a prostitute to gain money for the family.
You mean?
So there is sinful activity going on from the standpoint that he was facilitating her sinful activity.
You mean to say the prostitute was indulging in sinful activities even after marriage, is that?
Yes. According to this shastra that Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj had read.
What do you think? A prostitute who is a devotee of Krishna is far superior to a chaste housewife who does not have bhakti at all.
So what's your question?
See, a prostitute who is a devotee of Lord Krishna is far superior to a chaste housewife who does not practice Krishna consciousness at all, isn't it?
He's making the point that if a person is practicing, if a prostitute is chanting her rounds or whatever, you know, it's an interesting point, because we could say some devotees are same-sex devotees and they're chanting, and some devotees are not following the principles. And the question is, are they better than others? The absolute truth is the holy name is superior to helps one purify oneself in whatever condition of life. So unless and until you have the holy name in your life, you have no chance of ever getting out of the material world. Even you attain the Brahman, the Brahmajyoti, still you will fall because you're not purified. So anyone who's taken to the process of purification by the holy name is superior, in the sense not that they're a better person, but that they have somehow or another, by the mercy of Krishna, understood that they can get purified through this process. And even in the beginning of ISKCON, the beginning members of ISKCON were very fallen. I don't even want to go into the details in this temple, but they were very fallen. And remember, when Prabhupada would put up the four regulated principles, when he finally put up the fourth one, which was no illicit sex, they said, oh, Prabhupada, we can do the no intoxication, we can do the no meeting, we can do the no gambling, but this fourth one we can't do. And then what Prabhupada said to them, well, you must do. But Prabhupada, we can't do that. Prabhupada said, yes, you must do. So, yes, you're correct. Even a fallen person who's taken to the process is superior to even the most Pukka Brahman, who has not, who has even become a Mayavad in comparison. So that's how fortunate we are in this age, that we have a process that is so purifying that we can even be in a fallen condition and still it's a better position than someone who hasn't taken to the process. Because they'll eventually fall down, no matter how good they get, because their heart is not purified by the fire of bhakti. And therefore, all their work is useless. All that austerity they've done, those yajnas they performed, everything, it's for naught. It doesn't have the one in front of all the zeros. They don't know Krishna. How unfortunate for them. And yet that's the way the world works. We can't change that. That's how it is. It's like gravity. And that's what they get because that's what they desire. So in answer to your question, simply answer to your question, yes, that person is superior to the chaste housewife.
Hare Krishna.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for tolerating me. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.